That'll be our new theme song. Just me a cappella doing this wreckage by Gary Newman.
See, I like that very much. I'm liking everything about the victory of this wreckage as the voted upon podcast name as we move on.
Vox Popula, Vox Deli.
As Elon Musk says.
I was pushing for infantile disorder, but you know what? We went through two rounds of polling, and the people have spoken. The podcast spoken. That you once knew as the Antifada from 2018 until fall of 2025 is now called This Wreckage, in homage to the Sean and C. Derek Varn side project diving into the wreckage and Gary Newman's quasi-atheistic new wave punk song, This Wreckage.
I think it's appropriate, man. Like, diving into the wreckage, the whole concept of it was a chance for C. Derek Varn and I, and then you later on, too, joined as well to kind of excavate the left a little bit to try to kind of understand where we got to today. And I feel like our old iteration of the podcast, the Antifada, represented a moment in time that has really, truly passed. And who knows what comes out of this wreckage? I feel like 2025 is a banner year for maybe moving past things that have happened and anticipating things that might happen. And so I could not be more hyped to move forward with this thing, with this new name. Very exciting.
I'm happy to. I wish it was a funny name, but that's okay.
Funny has gotten us in trouble in the past, though. You
well,
know?
It doesn't like have to be funny in a provocative way. You know, infantile disorder is funny. Mystic Spiral is funny. But yeah, the people have chosen. And, you know, I can't, for years and years, I could whine about how you chose the name. And I said no, but I can't do that anymore.
No, if you hate on the name now, not only are you hating on yourself, but you're also hating on the people who support you, which are the listeners and the patrons of this show. So how are you going to hate, man?
I can't hate.
How are you going to hate? You can't hate. You can't fucking do
and
it,
And I am
man.
So thankful to everyone who helped out in the Discord, voting and sharing your thoughts. We got hundreds of votes. We have a lot of people listening to the show, and we really appreciate you sticking with us and supporting us as we keep doing what we're doing. It means the world to us, as you often say.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
And another thing I like about the name is it recalls a bit of Walter Benjamin, who we talk about on the show a lot.
Yeah.
Ultra-left icon. Obviously, his theses on the philosophy of history. And then also, there's an essay that I really like. I think it's Hannah Arendt's Intro to the Arcades Project, where she describes Benjamin's work as diving into a sunken ship and finding things from
pulling them to the surface, excavating them,
but they're not the same that they were. They've gone through a sea change. This is obviously we're talking in this context about looking at history, but in the context of theses of philosophy of history, we're talking about the world as it currently exists as a immense pile of wreckage. We are not progressives.
No.
We are not members of the Progressive International.
No.
We do not believe
no.
The long arc of history is bending towards justice. We live in a ruined world, a broken world, and we are here, if not to fix it, just to try to understand what happened.
There's a process of understanding, process of what happened. Trying to understand the 20th century. I think Benjamin's a great figure, if only because of his sad demise. You know, if you think about Walter Benjamin, as I understand it, commits suicide as he's on the border of Spain, like he's about to be able to flee the fascists. And he thinks he's caught. And so was it poison or he shoots himself? I forget what method he used, what means he used to kill himself. But the point is that, you know, that meme, never kill yourself. And then someone shows a stake.
Well,
never
kill
yourself.
I think he actually would have been caught. I forgot the full story, but I read one version where the people on the journey with him, whoever ended up capturing them in Spain, felt so bad for them because Benjamin killed himself that they let them go. I don't know. Maybe I'm misremembering that.
That's a nice idea, actually. It's like, oh, you poor people. We hate you. Constitutionally, we think your politics are terrible and you should die. But your buddy, like, killed himself very stupidly, so we're going to give you a pass. I mean, there's a lot of lessons here. I think we could all take never kill yourself as a good material lesson from all of this. Like, this wreckage, when we dive into the wreckage, when we go down to the seabed to try to find pearls, when we go down to the Titanic to try to get that necklace, you know, that we dropped with Leonardo DiCaprio or whatever, we're not going there to be sad. We're not going there for maudlin reasons. We're certainly not going there in anticipation of, like, our own demise.
We're looking for that treasure.
We're looking for that treasure, right?
We're looking for a sexy lady mermaid.
We're looking for, I mean, that is a treasure in and of itself. We've all seen the great documentary film, The Lighthouse. Maybe we're just looking for another guy to dance with. You know what I mean? Maybe we're looking to, like, to lay our hairy faces on another man's shoulder and just sway with him back and forth. Whatever it is you're looking for, we want to look for it with you. Life, where there's life, there's hope. And this wreckage is all about life. And the 21st century, as Matt Crispin and I said, you know, I don't know how many episodes that was. That was at least a few years ago. You know, things are breaking down, that there's going to be not a party of order and anarchy per se, but a party of life and a party of death. Mm-hmm. And here on this podcast,
same
concept, right? Similar concept anyway. What we on this wreckage pod, I really like that. This wreckage pod say is that we need to build a party of life. And the only way to do that is to move beyond not just progressivism and leftism, but capitalism itself. And we're committed to the fight for that, because that is the fight for life in the 21st century.
Well said. So this is actually a pretty good way into talking about this wonderful film, One Battle After Another, because it really is kind of, what's the term Jameson always uses? A pastiche of different moments of revolutionary history and settings and figures transfigured to fiction by Pynchon in Vineland, and then transfigured to cinema, adapted again for the current moment by Paul Thomas Anderson.
What do you know of the novel? Because I attempted to, as I often try to, especially when I'm seeing not movies, but cinema, I attempted to, like, go into this movie with a clear head without knowing anything about the Pynchon novel, without knowing anything about the kind of derivation of the story, not knowing anything about what Paul Thomas Anderson himself might have been wanting to portray, what Leonardo DiCaprio thought he was doing with this role. I kind of went in there to immerse myself in this world, and by God, did I enjoy it. I don't think I've enjoyed a PTA like this, a Paul Thomas Anderson like this, since, I don't know, maybe since Boogie Nights, or maybe, well, There Will Be Blood. I think what I want to say is that this movie, I think, was one of his finest moments. And anyone who hates on this movie, you just, I don't know, you don't really understand cinema.
I'm going to hate on this movie a bit.
Oh, shit. Well, will you take my bait? What do you know of the Pynchon?
I have not. Yeah, I think I actually picked it up at some, when I was, because in the, I was in high school, I read Crying a Lot 49, which is a great book to read as a high schooler. And I think I picked up Violin at some point and just never, I don't think I ever really read it. So I don't know much about the book. I did know that it was something of a follow-up to Inherent Vice, or like in the same universe as Inherent Vice. And I thought that this would be something of a spiritual sequel to Inherent Vice for Paul Thomas Anderson, at least. I liked Inherent Vice a lot when I saw it, but I watched it recently and didn't really like it quite as much. I mean, it's still really fun and beautiful at times. There's moments they're making out in the rain in LA to Neil Young. Mm. And the Bigfoot character is so good. And the voiceover, I love the 60s, you know, as I'm like a And so I thought that this would be sort of the same sort of thing, because people were saying it was so funny. So I thought this would be like Inherent Vice for the Reagan era. I did not expect, I guess I should have from the trailer, but I did not expect it to be so contemporary and for it to begin with a raid on a detention center.
Yes, I thought it was fascinating. Rax and I laughed our asses off when we saw it last night. And bizarrely, as we looked around us, kind of not everybody was laughing. Like, I'm not sure how you watched this movie and took it straight, which is maybe why I'm not sure why you were able to hate on it so much. But you haven't given me the reasons for why you hate upon it. I would say personally that I thought that, as you said, cinematically, like, just really, really nicely done. Very PTA. Very like, I mean, obviously my favorite movie of his is Boogie Nights, because I think that's like the best movie he's ever done.
But I think you might be right about that. It's not my favorite, but I think you're right.
Probably my favorite to watch. It's probably not his best movie, but it's like his greatest movie.
It's a banger start to finish. It's
a banger, and it's very similar to, and I'm not sure I was talking about this on the podcast. Maybe I was just talking about this and my partner kind of got a little theoretical about it, but, you know, similar to the Coen brothers. And I think the Coen brothers do their best work when they're doing period pieces, whether that's Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, or whether that's, I'm thinking of, there's the other glaring example. Yes, thank you.
Barton Fink.
Even Hudsucker Proxy. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they immerse you in this world, this very full world, in a way that, like, say, Burn After Reading, kind of, right. you walk away with it. It feels kind of paltry and a little bit light. I get the same thing. Like, we watched Punch Drunk Love a week or so ago, and it just feels, it's like a nice story that wraps itself up in the end. It doesn't really leave you wanting more or feeling particularly full. This movie, one battle after another, felt like you were being immersed in a world, a paranoid world, a world of humor, a world of aesthetic beauty, honestly, a frenetic world, a world that, as you said, is like a hyper-real world, a pastiche of so many different things. I wonder what you thought about the fact that it seems like this movie begins in, what, like Occupy Wall Street times? But it's like a bizarre Occupy Wall Street that's also like the entire history of the 60s left, like from the Weather Underground to the Black Panthers to whatever, like transposed into the 21st century. What did you make of that choice? Because it was a choice he made, right?
Yeah, this is a little bit about what took me out of it right from the get-go, is that, so that, yeah, there's a 16-year jump from the sort of prologue to when most of the movie takes place. I guess, you know, we can do the spoiler alert a little bit after this conversation, but yeah, it starts with this revolutionary group. I think it seems like this one of their first major actions is going to this border detention center staffed by military guards, cuffing all of the soldiers and guards, and then taking all of the detained migrants into a U-Haul and taking them to safety somewhere. And so my first reaction is like, okay, first of all, I don't know that they would want to go with you in that truck. Like, so that's a little bit different than reality, but that's fine. You know, this is a fictional movie. It's like a fictionalized United States. And I think the timeline is fictionalized as well. I don't want to let that stuff bother me too much. But what really bothered me was, and this isn't really Paul Thomas Anderson's fault, I think there's some other stuff that is, but just watching it, I watched it the day it came out, the day after Trump's, you know, we talked about it on the show. I called it an executive order. It wasn't. It was like a national security order, actually, which is way more serious. The sort of designation of Antifa as a terrorist organization. It's a fictional movie, right? But I was just worried that it's sending people the wrong message about what it means to be revolutionary.
Interesting. Okay.
And I think that combined with how kind of uncomfortable I felt prevented me from enjoying it as much as I could have. I am going to watch it again.
Yeah.
Under the conditions that I typically enjoy movies, which is when I'm feeling...
You didn't watch it on edibles the first
time? No, I was too paranoid to take an edible.
Oh, okay. Oh, fair enough. Okay.
When I'm feeling a little bit less paranoid, I'll take an edible and watch it again. Maybe I'll try to see one of the Vista Vision runs of it.
I partook in edibles, but and I think it enhanced the whole thing. I have in front of me right now, nobody can see except you, Andy, because you and I are on video doing an audio recording, but I have these handwritten notes because I started to take notes on my phone. I have
some as well, as you can see.
Nice, yeah. This is one of the... the way you order at Nighthawk Cinemas, you know, the little piece of
paper. What did you order?
I got a sandwich and I got a Bloody Mary. So, you know, cause I'm back to work now, which is nice. So
was there one battle after another specialty cocktail?
I think there was a specialty food, but God, I should fucking recall it. I think that, where I'd like to jump in and respond to what you said. And I understand not liking it for the reason that that you said, right? Which is that it gives people the wrong idea. I feel like Paul Thomas Anderson is not a leftist. And I think for that reason, he can kind of get at something that maybe people like you and I might have a harder time getting at. And I would... enter into this conversation looking at the first 15 to 20 minutes of the film. Again, spoiler alert, when we're back in a sort of pseudo Occupy, pseudo May 68 sort of moment where not only is like it, does it seem possible to have a Weather Underground type kind of direct action group? Let's not call them terrorists. Let's call them direct action. Fucking shit up and causing all sorts of trouble, getting not only the attention of the government, but presumably like the broader society. This is done in this film in such a hyper realistic and stylized and dare I say libidinal and sexy sort of way, almost Tarantino-esque in the way that he like portrays the violence, portrays the sex, portrays the sexy characters doing the sexy violence, doing the sexy leftism, that I feel like this way of portraying revolution and revolutionaries is not meant to seem like an aspiration, or it's not meant for us to want to become this type of person. It's instead to counterpose the next two thirds of the movie, which are of course like an old man and his regrets and fatherhood and failure, really. And ultimately showing the human side, the human consequences of living one's life in this sort of way. And I think that Paul Thomas Anderson as a non-leftist and maybe us as people who might adhere to a lot of the values of, say, 68 or whatever, but are distant from them and perhaps critical of them, might understand in the same way that we watched the movie Carlos. Did you ever see Carlos? Mm-hmm. The miniseries?
Yep.
Very sexy show, very much about sex, libidinal violence, about cool, about coolness, you know? And you look at it and it fulfills a kind of boomer vision of what it is to be a revolutionary. And I think maybe this film can help us. And it does help us. And maybe Paul Thomas Anderson to an extent did this for himself, put to bed such notions of revolution as this like sexy outpouring of libidinal violence on, you know, by good looking black and white people engaged in a struggle that, you know, is not the patient building of revolutionary cadre or a working class party for self-liberation, but instead is essentially like a series of like raids, you know, like everyone coming together and putting on their fucking black hats, getting their guns together and going out and looking cool. And maybe Paul Thomas Anderson is begging us to get past that.
I wish that were the case. That was not my reading of it from the ending of the movie. And maybe this is a good place to go into spoiler zone and go beyond the paywall as well. And by the way, there is a new link. There is a new URL. Patreon.com/thiswreckage. I think the old one will still work for a minute, but I don't know how long it's going to work. But Patreon.com/thiswreckage is now where you can subscribe to the show. And if you do it, we're running a fall promotion. You can subscribe for $5 a month. Or if you want to get that fall promotion, you can subscribe at the $10 a month level annually for a 16% discount. And I'll send you a copy of Jared Shanahan's new book, Every Fire Needs a Little Bit of Help, with an intro from me. I will send that to you postage paid. Just DM me your address after you sign up at that level. We've had a lot of people unsubscribing over the last month, I think out of fear of being associated with the name. Or maybe we suck, but I think it maybe is a combination of the two. So now we have a nice anodyne name, patreon.com/thiswreckage.
Folks, it's safe to sign up again, and it's incredible that we live in such a modern world that something as portentous as the switching the name and the whole branding of our musings is so easy to do just at the click of a couple buttons. So
signing up is legal.
Signing up is legal. And until Stephen Miller stands up there and denounces wreckage.
Oh, unless you're Alex Soros. If you're Alex Soros, do not sign up. We don't want a dime of your Antifa money.
We don't need the heat, to be quite honest with you. So thanks again to Andy for helping, for doing most of the work for this transition. Thank you to all the people on the Discord who voted. And for those people out there who are patrons and longtime patrons and listeners, thank you so much. If you've been scared to be a patron of ours, don't be scared any longer. No one's scared of the wreckage. We got to dive into that shit. Yeah. So I guess we'll see you on the other side. And here's to new beginnings, folks.